Good morning. It's nice to be here, the first all-day sit, the first Zazen Kai of the new year. It always seems kind of like an auspicious way to start off a new year. And really, we're so fortunate to be here today, to actually take this time to step out of our daily routines, whatever that is, just let it drop and stop. To just give ourselves the opportunity to be quiet. Although I have to say, I mean, it is blissfully quiet right now, but the last few periods have been a little surreal. It's kind of been as if every loud sound in the universe was like parading the drilling. I felt like I was getting root canal. And it's lightly snowing, but it was strange. It sounded like there was thunder. I don't know if anyone else heard that, but like the rumblings of thunder. And then it sounded like there was a freight train going by. I don't know if this is just my mind or this was really happening. But it's wonderful to just sit and be quiet and just observe the mind stream as it flows or perhaps rushes and churns. It actually doesn't really matter as long as we just sit still and watch, letting go of the thoughts as they arise and dissolve. Perhaps again and again and again and again and again. But not getting caught in the currents, perhaps we can actually appreciate them and maybe experience them differently, you know, if we can see them in a new way, in a different way, as if sitting on the banks of the stream, we might be able to see some other qualities to these flowing, rushing, or churning thoughts. And in this way, we can kind of like, there was a phrase I once heard by someone I know did the computer, like emptying the cache. You know, it's like if you're trying to do like something on your computer and then it just sticks and it just will not go on to the next thing and you're just ready to just burst because you can't get this thing. It's like, there's a thing you can go to, you turn it off, and then you empty the cache, and it sort of stops, and the whole thing turns off, and then it restarts, and it's like fresh and new and ready to, it's like a miracle. And similar thing with your phone, if it just like is really being stubborn and it's like all these things are happening and you just can't get it to work. Sometimes it's like it just needs to go to sleep. You just need to turn it off. Because I've gone into Apple and they've said, oh, just turn your phone off. And I'm like, what? But just turn it off. And then it's like a good night's sleep. It's like suddenly it's a new day. And things are different. But so in this way, we actually can unstick ourselves from some of these very, very repetitive streams of thoughts and behaviors that really cause us, and by definition and extension then others, so much grief. Usually we're not even aware that there are these streams of thoughts and behaviors because we're so identified with them. Which is why we need to sit here, so we can create that space to see. A couple of nights ago, I was driving home. It was kind of late from teaching, and I was about to get onto the BQE, and there had just been a broken down car in the Brooklyn Bridge. So, you know, what could have taken maybe 10 minutes had already taken like over 30 minutes. And you could say I wasn't happy about this. And then when you get off the BQE to go out to Staten Island, get off the bridge to get onto the BQE, there's a fork. And there's sort of like these two lanes, and it's not totally clear if they're two lanes or they're one lane. But if you're sneaky and you're just, it's two lanes, and it's like you just make your own lane and you just shoot by. But the person in front of me didn't really grasp that. And so this person just stopped where they could have just kept moving into this lane that exists if you create it. And so I was just so relieved to be like moving, and then I was like stopped, and I was just like sort of freaking out, and then I started honking, you know, because I was, and it was just kind of like escalating a little bit, and then, but I was just stopped dead in my tracks. And then all of a sudden, it was like, okay, I just really look in front of me, and all of a sudden I see this finger. And so, okay, then I was like, whoa, you know, like my chest started like puffing up. And I, you know, it was just like, but I was stuck. So I just look in front of me, and then all of a sudden I'm like, who is this fucking person? And so then I like look, and it's actually kind of this funky car. And then there's this like, and I'm not usually one for bumper stickers, but there's this like sort of ridiculously wonderful bumper stickers, like I stop for badgers or something. And I don't know, maybe she saw a badger. But, and then there were little, you know, equal rights things on the car. And then I noticed, actually, I couldn't even see the head over the seat. So maybe this person was actually really old or very small or, so, you know, I kind of was feeling this shift started to begin to happen as I just stopped, and I could begin to move from, you know, my chest ready to explode. Feeling tired, feeling frustrated, feeling extremely self-righteous. I mean, just so right. And this person was so wrong for being where they were. And it was just like, couldn't they see how much room they had? What was their problem keeping me waiting? But as I was sitting there and I started actually seeing this person, and they started seeming a little less ridiculous, I started feeling a little bit more ridiculous. Actually, it turned out to be a she, but She actually probably couldn't see how much wound she had for whatever reason. And she was likely worried and scared to pull out into traffic into this lane that she couldn't see. And thank God, because if she was worried and scared and she had pulled out into that lane, we probably all would have crashed, and I might not even be sitting here right now. So she probably, in that way, saved her, myself, and everyone else, even though I have to say, in that moment, I didn't care about anyone else at all. It was just this quality of being held up, and I didn't care about anyone else. Just being held up for a few minutes and then having, this come up into my face. It was so interesting to see that initial instinct was that even as I knew I was, at this point, I kind of, there's something about having this that makes you stop, really stop. It was kind of, even as I began to see that actually I was being a bit of an asshole, maybe more than a bit, there was this desire to be even more right. And I could feel this sort of tension in my body of like, I was really wrong, but I was really insulted. At that point, I was really insulted. Like, she didn't see how important I was and how necessary it was for me to be where I was going when I was going there. And this quality of like needing to defend this position, even as if I knew that the position was ridiculous. But actually, just sitting there and then beginning to actually let myself watch this unfold and watch these sensations and these reactions, and then actually starting to think about her, what was going on with her. The situation remained the same, but my point of view started to shift. It just started to dissolve. And in the space of about a minute, what was really awful when I could just let go and actually just be with, okay, you're really being ridiculous. This is ridiculous. And actually just allow myself to be ridiculous and maybe embarrassed, even though there was no one other than her in front of me to see it. It could actually become somewhat humorous and, in a way, become a real opening. And there was a real quality of lightening and release and dissolve when I could really just allow my point of view and my position to shift. And this is like the Diamond Sutra at work. It's nice, I'm using a Bokashu cup. Thank you. It's nice to use somebody else's cup. So, as I think most of you know now, we're studying the Diamond Sutra during this beginning of our 3-month period of intensified practice. called Ango, and it's one of the core Buddhist texts you've heard again and again. And it can be very challenging, to read and to try to understand. But there is so much there if you just let yourself quiet down, not unlike settling in for a period of zazen, just kind of open up and let yourselves receive it. Not kind of unlike reality or your own mind, just to come back to it again and again and again and again. It was interesting. There's a little YouTube video. I think the link for it might be on the website of the translator, Paul Harrison. And Musho so wonderfully created this new translation for us all to have and put it on the website. And he said that in a way, working with this sutra, reading the sutra, you know, it was meant to be recited and chanted, not just read, that there's a quality of it's almost like being in a concert or performing music. So there's something in the activity of the reading it that changes us. It's not so much just this idea that we just get that's outside of our experiencing it. So the actual experiences of the reading, and some of which may be frustration or consternation, is in fact part of it. I mean, it's sort of amazing that way. It's like life. So just an encouragement to really read it, even if it's hard. I found it hard, and you know, it continues to be, every time I sit down and look at it, something else emerges. Which is the thing about these texts, is they're really bottomless. So, as Roshi mentioned in her first talk, when we were up on retreat in the sutra, she brought up just the introductory paragraph, which I was also incredibly sort of struck by. So we're introduced, the Lord Buddha is about to begin the sutra. And they say he's speaking to a community of 1,250 monks. So just imagine, like, this space filled with over 1,200 people. You know, it's not small. And he could have just launched immediately into the words, quote unquote, the teachings, what we think of as the Dharma. But it takes really the majority of this opening paragraph to go on to say, then the Lord got dressed in the morning, took his bowl and robe, and entered the great city of Sravasti for alms. Then, after walking around the great city of Sravasti for alms, the Lord returned in the afternoon, after eating the alms food, washed his feet, and sat down on the seat set out for him with legs crossed, body held erect, and attention directed in front of him. So after eating, he sat here, washed his feet. Well, he washed his feet before he sat down, but he washed his feet, and then he sat down. Then we see him cross his legs, get his posture erect and alert, and his attention directed in front of him. And then it goes on with the monks coming before him, and then the sutra, the words, discussions begin. But this gives us a very concrete, embodied, intimate seat from which the view, in a sense, just continues to expand. So it then takes us on this journey, really, that we can't ever really understand, but actually can only experience again, which is really not unlike our lives. So this quality of settling into where we are is a really, 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 I think, key thing here. He doesn't just rush through town on his way to give the important sutra. And he didn't just grab a seat and then start talking. He didn't just fly through the reality of the routines of his life to get to the important or the significant or the interesting or the exciting part. Each activity is equal. Just with the commuting thing going, you know, because I live in Staten Island, my studio's in Jersey City, and then most of my jobs are in Manhattan or Brooklyn. So I spend a lot of time kind of ostensibly going from one place to another, and it can often be frustrated when I'm not already where I'm ostensibly going. But from another perspective, and when I can inhabit this perspective, I am, of course, always there. In section 29, the text says, when the Lord Buddha is speaking to Subhuti, he says, however, Subhuti, if someone were to say that the Tathagata goes or comes or stands or sits or lies down, he does not understand the meaning of what I have preached. Why is that? He or she who is called the Tathagata, Subhuti, has not come, Agata, from anywhere, nor has she gone, Gata, anywhere. That is why she is called the realized, worthy, and perfectly awakened one. And earlier on in the text, if you haven't read it, Buddha tells Subhuti that Tathagata translates as realized. So the Tathagata is the realized one, which is a synonym really for reality. So it's realized reality. And this is also sometimes referred to as things as they are or suchness. So during my commutes, it's occurred to me that I actually spend almost as much of my time between places as I do in my so-called destinations. So it's interesting to look at what is this between space? Is it nothing? Actually, that experience I had crossing the bridge was big in a way. It wouldn't have happened in my living room where I was rushing to get. So when I let go of where I'm going and where I've come from, actually quite a lot happens in these spaces. There's much to encounter, and actually, I've actually found that that's where a lot of probably my best ideas come, is just when I'm on my way, those spaces between. So when I'm really present, settled where I am, and fully engaged, there actually is no between. There's no coming, there's no going, there's no destination. There's only, I break for badgers, or whatever else. Bayonne. When we walk through the Zendo door at the end of the day, are we leaving here or in the process of arriving somewhere else? As one happens, the other happens. Depends upon how we actually choose to see it, where our minds are. And actually, one doesn't even exist without the other. There is no such thing as leaving if there wasn't a going. We can't arrive one place unless we've gone from somewhere else. What if our minds were simply and thoroughly just walking in the hall, completely where our feet were? Is there any coming or going then? When we are actually thoroughly walking, who is even noticing coming or going? So the Diamond Sutra tells us again and again and again that it is our ideas, when they are fixed, that in a sense limit the frame of reality, how we see it, how we experience it, starting first and foremost with who we are, by extension, who others are, where we're going, where we came from, what reality is, that our ideas, when they are fixed, actually get in the way of just being here. But with our attention directed directly in front of us in this moment, we can just allow the unfolding wonder of reality, things as they are, suchness. To be ongoing and continuous. last week when I was at Sing Sing, I was doing interview, and I was talking with this guy who's quite character. He's from Panama, and you know, has this very strong accent. I was like, "Why do you meditate?" And sometimes he can be kind of just playing around with you, messing with you. And he said, "You know, why do you meditate? What difference does it make? What difference does it make in your life?" So I kind of thought maybe he was just doing one of his messing with me little things, and I, you know, started to turn it around. Asked him, "Well, you know, what do you think?" And he said, "Don't give me that bullshit. I asked you a question. you know, I really, really want to know." And so I guess, you know, we've been reading the Diamond Sutra a lot, and, you know, in that moment, I kind of said that, in fact, it was so that I could get out of hell. Sitting Zazen, you know, I do, in fact, quiet and stop the stream of ideas and thoughts. And in that quieting and that stopping, there's that space where I'm no longer ruled by them. And I have found that my mind is much larger than I ever thought, and that in fact I am much larger than I ever thought. And the world isn't as awful as I pretty much always thought, if I'm honest. The dropping of just one idea can be the difference between heaven or hell, moment by moment. And I said, "So how about you?" And he said, "Me too. I just really wanted to hear it outside of me." And so this is part of why we really need to come to the Zendo, to read the sutras, to practice with community. In some ways, it's not to learn something foreign and new, but it's actually, I think, to recognize and connect with what we already know deep inside. You know, that's the thing about the Dharma and the teachings. You know, it's sort of like when you hear something or you read something or something in the Zendo happens, it's like, oh my God, you know, it's like some long lost thing that you've known all your life, but you forgot. And it's like, oh yes. So, for some reason, this led me to, you know, what I think is extremely profound lyric from one of our great sages, Jimi Hendrix. And this last verse, he says, "There was a young girl whose heart was a frown, because she was crippled for life and she couldn't speak a sound. And she wished and prayed she could stop living, so she decided to die. She drew her wheelchair to the edge of the shore, and to her leg she smiled, "You won't hurt me no more." But then a sight she'd never seen made her jump and say, "Look, a golden-winged ship is passing my way." And it really didn't have to stop, it just kept on going. And so castles made of sand slips into the sea eventually. Our lives are like this. Castles arise and dissolve without end. Can you see we are not only the castle, but also the sea? Thank you.